Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Do you leave your phone and keys and wallet somewhere close to food? Like in the pantry, by the chips, or in the fridge?
Dude.
Yeah, because food short circuits your executive functioning. You might have ADHD. Did you ever go into a room while looking for your shoes? It saw a crazy story someone sent you from the news. And the reason why you came in there just left your memory. You might have ADHD.
But
did you come up with an idea that no one's ever thought? Because most great inventors have the same brain that we've got. Are you really good at making people laugh in comedy? You might have ADHD.
Hello and welcome to the Holderness Family Podcast, and this, our special series, all about ADHD. I'm Penn Holderness, and I have ADHD. My lovely wife Kim and I wrote a book about ADHD that you can pre-order right now. It's called ADHD is Awesome. You can just Google that. It'll pop right up. ADHDisAwesomeBook.com. In the three parts of this special podcast series, we're aiming to answer three big questions about a type of brain that is often misunderstood. Last week, we answered the question, what does ADHD look like? Today, we're going to answer, what's the best way to help someone with ADHD? And next week, we'll answer the question, what do I do with my ADHD? So today, how to help someone with ADHD. We are going to talk to the brilliant Dr. Emily King. We're going to play a little more music. And at the end, my lovely wife is going to join me because she has become an absolute ninja at supporting my ADHD. But I want to start by talking about something we can all relate to, a cold. Cold has symptoms, a runny nose, headaches, fatigue. For some reason, I get farty when I... That's Kim. Hi, Kim.
Sorry.
A doctor recognizes these symptoms. They look to treat them with medicine, right? The cold goes away. We feel better. That's the medical model of treatment. It works on a lot of things. For years, that was mainly how ADHD was treated. In fact, this is how my ADHD was treated when I was diagnosed in 1995, just like this. Symptom. You're having trouble concentrating? Solution. This medicine may make it better. Symptom. You're forgetting important things. Treatment. This medicine will help you function better. Symptom, you're misbehaving? Treatment, well, that's just a childhood phase. It's not permanent, but this medicine will manage the symptoms until you're better. To be super duper clear, I am in no way against ADHD medication. It is proven to be extremely helpful to the majority of people who take it. But what happens to this course of treatment? This, you know, what's the problem and how do you treat it? What happens to that when you believe, as I do, that ADHD can actually be a good thing in many cases? Is medicine the only answer? Is there more we can do to enrich the lives of the people that we love who have this type of brain? Well, there are a growing number of doctors and therapists who believe there is more that can be done, and they've added a strengths-based approach to supporting people with ADHD. The support includes building systems and teams around someone with ADHD, but this support also includes asking bigger questions like, what can we do to make the world around us a little more welcoming for people who have our particular type of brain? What can we do in offices and schools around the world? Well, our guest today is Dr. Emily King, who as a child psychologist has worked with neurodiverse children for 2 decades. She's been asking those bigger questions about ADHD on her blog, learnwithdremily.com, and we are so happy to have her join us for this conversation. Dr. Emily, welcome again to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Penn.
Fun fact to start with.
It's a fun fact. Tricking you into learning something. It's a fun fact. You're about to learn something. It's a fun fact.
Dr. Emily, did you know that the Golden Girls was supposed to have a different theme song? So instead of the iconic Thank You for Being a Friend, the show's producer wanted to use Bette Midler's song Friends, but the rights to the song were too expensive, and so we got stuck with something probably better.
Well, I'm glad.
Right?
I didn't know that.
And why I mentioned that fun fact is because we're going to talk about being a good friend, whether that's being a parent or being a friend or being a teacher or being someone who's around someone with ADHD. Mm-hmm. I want to start with this. True or false? You can grow out of ADHD.
So I would say false from a clinical mindset of your brain is your brain. We are all born with our unique brains and it will be our brain for our lifetime. A brain that's wired for ADHD is going to be that kid, that teen, that adult's brain. However, we are not just what we're born with. We're not just nature. We're also nurture. And we know that from research that we can learn strategies. We can develop skills that help us manage symptoms of ADHD or characteristics that pop up in relationships that we tend to have or that we notice in our patterns. And then the other thing to know is that our brains keep maturing. Mm-hmm. So something we might be worried about in our 10-year-old ADHD child's brain likely will not happen when they're 30 because they'll just be more mature.
I think I agree with you wholeheartedly. I do believe that if you're born with ADHD, you have that brain for the rest of your life. There are certainly ways to manage it. What do these kids need? Not everybody knows the answer to that question.
Right. And it's partly the job of a therapist to figure that out, but parents know their kid the best. Mm-hmm. Teachers also really know their students. And one of the ways as a therapist, but also as a parent, and when I consult with teachers, is starting with what is working. This gets into what we talk about as the medical model versus kind of a strengths-based, more strengths-based model.
Right.
The medical model is a problem-solving model.
Yeah. What's wrong with you? How do we fix it? Right?
Yeah.
What are the symptoms?
And
how
so,
do you fix it?
Exactly. And so that it all has evolved from an illness or a disease that has a blood test to diagnose it or a urine test or a brain scan to diagnose it. And then there is research to help that person heal. The closest we get to this with behavioral presentations of brain differences is like our nervous system being overwhelmed and sometimes needing to reduce supports to heal. But overall, the problem with the medical model or the problem-solving model with ADHD and with any, you know, disability that has a behavioral presentation, any mental health presentation of, you know, behaviorally speaking, we run the risk of not understanding how people are feeling because we're paying so much attention to what they're doing.
At the center of your theory, the strengths-based approach, is that parents, spouses, friends, they can all be coaches in this situation.
When we think about, though, a coach, we all have that cultural feeling of like, what that is. Everyone knows what that is, right? The way that I differentiate coach from parent, though, and what I love about using this metaphor is that coaches don't really get ever, I don't think, embarrassed by the behavior of who they're coaching. Mm. Parents, on the other hand, have this whole emotional load of, oh my gosh, what are they doing? They can't sit in their seat. They can't X, Y, and Z, right?
Could it also be shame-based? Like, this is the child that I've raised. This is my fault?
It could be. So some parents will have that feeling, and this happens a lot around extended family because we get messages from one generation removed from us, grandparent age people. If you're listening and learning, thanks for being here. But that generation tends to struggle with this idea of strengths-based and is like, why won't they just sit when you tell them to sit. And that means your rules are just not strong enough or consistent enough. The coach idea helps us stay in that lane of helping a kid without us getting overwhelmed by all of our emotions, all our baggage, because we've got lots of baggage as parents, right? Teachers are the same way in terms of, yes, we can all be overwhelmed as people, sure. And there are certainly kids that can push teachers and coaches' nervous systems to the brink. However, we don't have that same fear that a parent has about, this is ultimately my responsibility to raise this kid. The other thing that coaching does is it helps us know boundaries of when to support and when to step back. And those boundaries can get really clouded with parenting because, again, we're acting on our emotions. We're also sometimes tired and we're not on our A game. But when we show up as a coach, we're like, okay, does this child have this skill? If not, is it the time to teach and support this skill? Okay, I think they've got the skill. Time to step back and see what happens. They're on the court. Mm-hmm. Now let's see if they can execute the skill or if they can't. But you don't jump in as the coach and start playing for them. You sit back and you watch and you figure out what's working, what's not working. And then you go back to practice the next week and figure it out.
Just as important as people who support ADHD are people who support this podcast. And so we're going to let them talk right now.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Let's be honest. We've all had embarrassing BO moments. Like, any time you have to speak in public, if you don't put deodorant on, it's like a different type of sweat. Ugh. And you and I did like a thing and I got done. And thank God I had a blazer on because it sort of masked it. But then I took it off and got in the car and it was just like,
there is a lot of pit sweat. Yeah. Fortunately, Lumi Whole Body Deodorant is making it so none of us ever have to worry about that BO again.
Unlike certain other DOs, Lumi is powered by mandelic acid to control odor in a new way.
Lumi delivers outrageous 72-hour odor control everywhere from your pits to your feet.
Lumi is a game-changing deodorant designed by an OBGYN.
Fast forward 6 years and her Whole Body Deo has now earned over 300,000 five-star reviews.
How? Well, unlike certain traditional deodorants that try to mask odor with a fragrance, Lumi is formulated to stop odor before it starts, more like a pre-odorant.
I personally love that Lumi is baking soda free and paraben free.
You can choose from a variety of fresh, bright scents like clean tangerine, lavender sage, or toasted coconut.
Lumi's starter pack is perfect for new customers. It comes with a solid stick deodorant, cream tube deodorant, two free products of your choice like mini body wash or deodorant wipes, and free shipping.
As a special offer for listeners, new customers get $5 off a Lumi starter pack with code HOLDERNESS at LumiDeodorant.com.
That equates to over 40% off your starter pack when you visit Lumi Deodorant and use code HOLDERNESS.
And it's Lumi, L-U-M-E. All right, you made it through that. Thanks for sticking around. Let's get back to the conversation. Okay, Dr. Emily, while we're talking about strengths-based, while we're talking about coaching, we have a question from Al in Illinois about positive reinforcement versus negative reinforcement.
My name's Al. I'm from the Chicago area. I have a question for my son. He's 7, and he has been having difficulty in school. We think that positive reinforcement has been really helpful for him, and we're actually kind of battling it out with his teachers, and we have an advocate involved. And really what I'd love to know is, have there been studies or any information regarding negative reinforcement on kids with ADHD? Because they're obviously feeling like they've got that 1,000-pound weight that they have to lift in order to get a task started or or to get those executive functioning skills. And so it looks like laziness to an outsider, or maybe they're just trying to be ornery or mean. But I feel like positive reinforcement has such a better effect, a better result. And I'm curious to know if there's ever been a study that negative reinforcement actually does damage.
Okay. I feel like Al's doing a great job parenting, by the way.
Yes. Both negative reinforcement and punishment, I never recommend for kids with ADHD, because it is really hard to figure out if they actually have the skill to do the thing. If a child does not have a skill, like an independent skill to turn in their work independently without all the reminders, and then they get negative feedback, whether that's loss of the fun thing or whether that is, I have to go do something negative that I hate now, either one of those, they're getting the message that they're not good enough and they can't change it because they don't have the skill. Negative feedback is supposed to spur you on to do the thing you're supposed to do tomorrow. But if you don't have the skill to do the thing you're supposed to do tomorrow, you're stuck and you're feeling defeated. And you're also feeling like the people around you don't get you, which is a problem. So positive reinforcement is going to be more motivating. We know that ADHD brains love dopamine. They need a lot of it. They thrive on it. They love it. So the positive feedback kids can get from telling them what to do and what they will get when they do the thing is motivating for them. Now, this is extrinsic motivation, right? And I know I've worked with families that are like, are we always going to be rewarding our kid? Like forever?
Yeah, it's a good question. But are you about to tell me that extrinsic motivation leads to more intrinsic motivation?
Ding, ding, ding. Okay. Yes. So if we never give our kids the experience of the dopamine hit of I do the thing I'm supposed to do, and then I get this yummy reward that I'm so motivated by, whether it's, you know, access to something I want to do or, you know, whatever it is, that's a feeling I have of like, I did the hard thing and now I get to do the fun thing.
I'm thinking about a teacher and how they would use that in a world where they have 30 students, where it sometimes mm-hmm. is very difficult not to use punishment and negative reinforcement. And right. we as parents need to give them some grace as teachers that, good God, they're doing the best they can. So what's the best advice you give to teachers who are overwhelmed with those sorts of limitations when they're dealing with an ADHD child?
Yeah, the very first thing I always coach teachers on is figure out what all of your students need to regulate their body. So some students are just really active. Some students are really talkative. Some students are really funny. Some students ask a lot of questions. You know, think about all the different ways that kids move their bodies, move their mouth, you know, move their ideas around in your classroom. And most teachers are like, yep, there are about four or five categories of these kids. Hang you know, on, there aren't endless categories.
Just to interrupt, so you said how they regulate, and regulating is a good thing. Explain really quickly what regulating is and why it's important.
Yep. So our nervous systems need to be regulated to learn, to communicate in a calm way. And you'll hear these terms emotionally regulated and emotionally dysregulated. And when a child becomes upset, when an adult becomes upset, we become emotionally dysregulated and we lose access to our higher level executive functioning and problem solving and sometimes appropriate language. So this is when our kids will like yell stuff that they wouldn't yell at us when they're calm, or a child may say something to a peer at school that they wouldn't say when they're calm. And so when you have a student who's emotionally dysregulated, and it may not look like externalizing behavior, it may look internal. So that kid comes in sad, that kid comes in defeated. They're not being a quote unquote behavioral disturbance in your class, but you notice something's different emotionally for them. They're not talking as much as they would. That child their brain is handling emotions at that moment. So when we're regulated, we can learn. And so when a teacher is noticing lots of movement or lots of talking, usually kids are dysregulated a little bit. You know, we all have to like stop things if they're very dysregulated and it's not safe. Yeah. But excitement is also dysregulation. Think about how your kids act when the babysitter comes over. Think about how, you know, kids act when you're like at school, when you're like, okay, we're getting out early today for whatever reason. Like all of that is dysregulation, not good or bad. It's just outside of this window where we are focused and regulated and can learn. So I always ask teachers to notice how kids are moving their bodies, because there's some preventative stuff we can do to allow kids to stand, allow kids to move, allow kids to run errands, making sure we're teaching kids or asking them to sit right after recess. So possibly changing the time of day that they do something. And this takes, you know, strategic planning with administration and schedules, but there are things we can think about instead of asking a child to do something that's not coming naturally to their body or their brain, adapting the environment or the schedule or the people that are around them or the topic that they're learning to align more with how they are approaching the school day, if that makes sense.
Yes, it does. And when you're done with working with teachers in schools about ways to keep people up and moving and talking, can you move on to the offices of the world, please?
So absolutely. So I think that we are in a huge cultural shift. And my hope is that we get there faster than waiting for elementary kids to grow up. But I mean, my goal in life is to make school better for neurodivergent kids. And these kids are going to grow up hopefully with peers that understand them better, who will one day be their coworkers. As you and I know, so many people with ADHD are entrepreneurs. That's not an accident. There's at some point you did not like the structure of corporate America. And so I think that that creativity to be celebrated and that moving your body and breaks. And I do think that the balance of work from home, work in the office thing, like it is becoming more flexible, which is great. But to shift the way we think about the traditional classroom, the traditional workplace, we do not have traditional brains. And so that's where this stress comes from.
I want you to know that your plight to raise awareness of ADHD in schools is working, because we got this question from Matt.
Hi, my name is Matt and I live in the Midwest. And my ADHD question is, what's the best way to interact with ADHD kids? Because I'm a custodian for a school district kindergarten all the way up to fifth grade. And I just want to make sure that I do it properly. If you could say what's the best way to interact with them possibly and how I could do my best for them.
Oh my gosh.
Let's go, yes. Matt.
Let's go, Matt. Okay. So just the fact that you are listening and asking this question, I love it. The best way you can interact with kids with ADHD, just know that they need, usually when they're young, they need lots of movement. They may have short attention spans and go quickly to be interested in something over here when actually they're supposed to be doing something over here. So I assume as a custodian, you're in the hallways or in the classrooms a lot. And, you know, if you ever find a child who's not where they're supposed to be, you can be super helpful and get them where they're supposed to be. And also thinking about, I also think as a custodian, you're probably thinking about the spaces and the places that kids do work. I can imagine that there are going to be some messes in a school with ADHD brains. There are just going to be some messes, right? When we're thinking about a school community of in the school, that everyone has a different job, I think that it's helpful to think through what is the child's responsibility, which I usually talk to kids about. You're in charge of your body. You're in charge of your space. And then once you got those two things down, you can start being helpful in the community around you, whether that's a classroom, whether that's a family, whether that's a school building. One thing I know that could be helpful in just in a school-wide approach is giving kids jobs that they like, that they can rotate, and helping the custodian take care of their space or take care of their classroom or their hallway or whatever that is. So those are some ideas that pop into my mind, but I love that you're asking this question.
This is a audio medium, but Emily and I were smiling ear to ear when he asked that question, in part because we're glad he asked it, but also in part because I think we're making progress here. I'm going to take a little bit of a right turn. We've been answering this question this entire show, which is how do I help someone with their ADHD? And I think we've gotten a lot done, but I want to go back a little bit and I want to ask, how do we help our daughters who have ADHD specifically? It's different, mm-hmm. right? They're diagnosed differently. They're mm-hmm. harder to diagnose. They're chronically underdiagnosed. Can you share some of your insight really of all of that?
A lot of our research on ADHD is on white boys. And we have to remember that what white boys look like when they have ADHD, which is usually impulsive, active, They're usually in a school environment where they're distractible. We miss a whole swath of people, of what it looks like in different cultures and what it looks like for girls. There are a lot of undiagnosed women with ADHD who are now starting to recognize it when their kids have been diagnosed, or as they age, some of their strategies are harder to implement because we all kind of start forgetting things when we're 45 and up. So when we think about girls and what they might look like and how they may look different, and we're, again, in the weeds of starting more research on this. So it's happening, it's just slow. And if you looked in the DSM, the Diagnostic Statistical Manual, which is what MDs use for diagnostic classification in the US, all of that research is generally speaking based on white populations and heavily based on boys. Girls can tend to be less active. So they may, we called this is like fly under the radar or slip through the cracks in terms of diagnostic criteria because they're not quote unquote causing a problem. However, is that problem an internal feeling of I could be doing this better or more efficiently, but I'm not. So I'm just kind of feeling like I'm mediocre through school. And then kids get older and have insight and can explain things to us. And they're like, yeah, I've never really been good at organizing that. So lots of the distractibility or inattention that girls might have, we need to be paying attention to, because that might be their only presenting symptom when they're young. Definitely paying attention to the emotional piece of this, because when we don't treat and support ADHD, we see it in negative emotions. We see it in low self-esteem and self-defeating talk, in I don't want to do that, I don't care. It's easier to say I don't care than to try and to fail. And you may notice, though, more of a kid kind of, especially a girl, maybe was teacher pleasing, did everything they needed to do in elementary school, but starts to crash and burn in middle school because there's just too much to organize, or they haven't found the thing they're really into and they need a thing. Because I think that's really important for all kids, but especially for kids who feel like they are not good at a few things. They really need a thing they can dive into and feel successful in.
I'm glad you mentioned minorities as well. We talk about that in our book, and I've heard from doctors in interviews, and some of it's kind of shocking.
And we have many more studies to do, a lot more work to do in making sure that the research is inclusive so that we understand what ADHD looks like in different communities, in different school settings, and just in different cultures.
This has been super helpful. I love dreaming with you about the world when everyone gets this and every school is equipped with enough information to be able to implement this, and every office in the same way. I have this kind of, this hope, and I just got it when I was talking to you, that it may not happen like for me, but like you said, our kids are starting to learn more about this, and and you're starting to work with them, and you're starting to work with their parents. Those kids are going to get old enough where they're going to run stuff. And maybe that's when the big change happens. Not everybody can get an appointment with Dr. Emily. She's very popular because she's very good. What is the best resource for a parent?
If parents want to keep learning with me, I do host online parent workshops monthly, and you would just go to learnwithdremily.substack.com. You can subscribe to all of the workshops, or you can subscribe to one of them at a time. And then I provide professional development to teachers. That is both on demand, because I want teachers to always have access to things, but also I speak a lot in schools and do professional development for teachers. And that is all at learnwithdremily.com. And right now, probably when this airs, I'm in the countdown to summer sale for my professional development course for teachers called the Neurodiverse Classroom. So between spring break and Memorial Day, when we're all counting down, that's what I like to highlight.
Awesome. Because I have ADHD and I did this interview, I'm going to end with, what did I mess up or what did I miss?
I think I do want to say a couple words about parents taking care of themselves, or teachers taking care of themselves.
Thank you. And yes.
So I want to validate for parents, like I think we touched on at the beginning, of like, some of these things are going to drive you crazy and you're going to need a break. It doesn't mean you're a bad parent. It doesn't mean you're a bad teacher. It means that that child's activity level, volume level, ability to remember their belongings has overwhelmed your nervous system to the brink, and your nervous system needs some relief. And so what are you going to do to put some boundaries around that? So this could look like tag teaming with another parent or another teacher, putting some structure around when is that kid independent? And that's when I'm going to do my thing. When is that kid not independent? And that's when I need to be on my A game, making sure you're getting enough sleep, because this is like parenting on steroids is what I like to call it. You are parenting, but you need to like be on a lot of the time, and noticing that sometimes that means that if your child's not independent, you'll just have to structure your child being with somebody else during that time that you take a break. But it is so important that you get some relief from that so that you can come back in with that message of love and care and support that you do always have for your child. But sometimes you feel like you can't show if you have reached your emotional limit.
Thank you, Dr. Emily, so much for joining us.
You're so welcome. Thanks for having me.
Okay, Kim's giggling in the background because I'm bringing in, after hearing all of this incredibly inspiring stuff from Dr. King, who we love.
Love.
I'm bringing in my most important team member who just learned over the years to show grace as a teammate. And I'm saying all this because she just talked for seven
incredible minutes.
Thoughtful minutes about this whole thing. And guess what I forgot to press?
Record. To be fair, you are the one. I laugh and I don't get upset with you because I could have also hit record. So I'm not going to be too hard. You are sitting closest to the little recorder machine.
Okay. Let's go live emotions. I am ashamed. Because this is, I know exactly why this happened. I was working on something over there and then you came in and said that you were ready to record this part and you did all of the, you know, you listened to it. You're like ready to go. And then I came over and I didn't take a break in between and I forgot to press record because I have ADHD.
Let me tell you. Okay. Maybe you have ADHD, but let me tell you how common this is. We both worked in the news world. Can I tell you why? The old double click. It happens all the time. Can I tell you guys a really terrible story about a double click?
First, it would oddly make me feel better right now.
Okay. This is like not a laughy story. So I worked at Inside Edition. Deborah Norville was able to get an interview with Christopher Reeve towards the end. He was paralyzed at the time.
Horse riding accident.
Yeah. You know, famously Superman, and he was in a horse riding accident. And she secured an interview with him. At that time, there was two cameras. So one was shooting Christopher Reeves and then one was shooting her. Right. And so that you could kind of get those reverse shots, her asking the question, him answering the question. Well, the one that recorded her asking the question and like the back of his head rolled, the photographer double clicked on Christopher Reeve and he passed away like a month later or 2 months later. And so it's one of those things where it was such a medical ordeal
for him to be able
able to do that interview, that redoing it was not something. So every time that happens, I'm like, it's okay. It's not an emergency. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, back to the podcast.
Yeah. Great. Honestly, great forgiveness. You just showed some grace. You just treated me as like a good coach would treat someone with ADHD. And it was great hearing Dr. Emily talk about that as well.
I loved how she framed being a coach as opposed to, of course, you're going to parent. But in the parenting role, I feel like I take on a lot of, if something goes wrong for my kid, I internalize it. I make it my fault. When you were writing the book, because this has been a process of several years, our son, he had been diagnosed with ADHD. We sort of danced around it in this book because we felt at age 11, you can't really say, yeah, I want you to, I'm fine to talk about it. Age 14, he's out. He's very public with his ADHD. He's very proud of it because he really does see it as a superpower. So he now talks about it, but it's not really written about a ton in the book. But when she talks about framing it as a coach, that really hit home to me because as his parent, when he doesn't turn in his homework, he does it but doesn't turn it in, I think, oh, I should have been on the homework portal. I should have been checking that. I need to put more systems in place. Whereas a coach has a better boundary and can say, hey, bud, what are we going to do next time? And doesn't personalize.
Yeah, he or she doesn't put that on themselves.
Right. And so I take it less personally if I'm his coach because it is my responsibility as his parent
sure.
to put systems in place. And a coach, I think about, you know, he's on this basketball team. He has a coach that's always going to remind him to do things. He doesn't get mad at PC for having, you know, if he's yelling something that he's, it's just like those cues. He's not upset with him. He's not embarrassed by him. That really hit home. I do a little bit of writing in this book. And one of the shifts I had to make was to find those moments of positivity. And she talks about that, of praising the positive. I am a perfectionist. I don't love that term. But I'm an Enneagram 1, and it's really easy to go negative. It's really easy for me to sit here where my brain, it seems so simple. Why wouldn't you just do it this way? I had to make this shift a couple years ago, and finding moments to praise things that you do great, things that he does well, it has been a huge shift for us all.
It's becoming a huge shift in the medical community.
Yeah.
You heard Dr. Emily talk about it. It used to be the medical model that she talks about. They used to say, okay, what's wrong with this person? What do we do to treat it? And they have moved to that strengths-based approach. It's a lot of what you're talking about. The first question she asks anybody when they're working with them is, when are they crushing it?
Yeah.
When do things work? And then basing their plan around that and building, as they said, a team.
Yeah.
It's been the most fulfilling part of this book while we're talking about PC, our son, is that he has, even though he has ADHD, we have become part of each other's teams. Because we know what's going on inside each other's brains.
Yeah.
And that's been awesome.
It's been awesome. Speaking of awesome and praising the positive, these special bonus episodes were, you know, you and the team around us are working hard to produce these. I've really enjoyed just having you as a solo host. You ask the questions that only somebody with ADHD could ask. And I think as somebody who does not have ADHD, it was really fascinating.
Also, before we all go, just so you can remember what you learned, here's a wrap about it.
ADHD, what's the best way to help? If you are a parent, be proud of yourself. You just listened to a podcast trying to assess the best way to set up your kid for success. Dr. Emily King is pretty smart. She thinks the best way to start is to find your kid's strengths. What are they good at? What kinds of things work? Find environments that help and don't hurt. And parents, how about this approach? Instead of thinking like a parent, think like a coach. A coach doesn't really feel parental shame. They motivate them just to get better at the game. Shame is understandable. I get it a lot. But once you understand the great brain that they've got, finding all of their strengths gets more easy. There's a better life out there with ADHD.
So thank you so much for listening to episode 2 of our All About ADHD bonus series. The series concludes next week with part 3, which answers the question, what do I do with my ADHD? We'll have Dr. Noreen Russell in, as well as a special guest, my son. Thank you, Kim, always, for being my amazing coach. And thank you all for your consideration in buying the book, ADHD is Awesome, which you can find, just type it into a computer, it'll just show up.
http://. Yeah. Okay. Love you.
Bye. See you next week.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.